This is Jared Bush from the Green Bay Packers, and you're watching Cheesehead TV.
Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. Today, I have some reflections on championship weekend as they relate to the Green Bay Packers. But first of all, congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks for beating the San Francisco 49ers and qualifying for the Super Bowl in the NFC side of the bracket, the Packers side of the bracket. Congratulations to the Denver Broncos in beating the New England Patriots and qualifying for the Super Bowl as well. Super Bowl 48 is now set and less than 2 weeks away it'll be taking place. So I think, as you know, being a Green Bay Packers talk show here, podcast, kind of relating our thoughts to the Packers in regards to what happened on the field. First of all, congratulations also to, you know, like John Schneider, general manager of the Seattle Seahawks, the guy who came from Green Bay, was a disciple of Ted Thompson, if you want to put it in those terms. I'm not sure John Schneider would exactly say maybe he's a disciple, but regardless, he came from Green Bay, went out there, has gone on to had much success, has obviously built a championship team. And I think over the course of the next 2 weeks, you're going to see a lot of attention on the way John Schneider builds a team as opposed to the way Ted Thompson builds one. John Schneider, much more willing than his boss to build a team through free agency. Of course, I mean, especially in recent weeks with the loss by the Packers in the playoffs, there's been a lot of criticism of Ted Thompson and his draft and develop methods and how they really haven't been up to snuff since the Packers themselves won a Super Bowl back during the 2010 season. Now three straight years of playoff losses, and people are wondering, is free agency the way to go? Maybe not, you know, quite to the extent of, that the primary method of building your team, but certainly getting involved into some extent. You know, John Schneider going out and trading for Percy Harvin, going out and signing Michael Bennett, some of the big moves that they made that helped them became a championship team. And you know, I know a lot of people point to the contract of Russell Wilson, who's only in his second year in the NFL, and being very low. And when you have a Pro Bowl quarterback on your team who is making such little money, less than $1 million for the entire season, and something like $500,000 some odd, you know, they can spend a lot of money at other positions and build around them, whereas the Packers don't have that luxury with a veteran and a good quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, where you necessarily have to dump a lot of money into him and then have less money to build around him. It's a necessary evil, but, you know, there is that to factor in as well. Regardless, however teams do it, congratulations to John Schneider in building that championship team, and the other player, former Packers on the team out there in Seattle, Breno G. Kamini, the Seahawks right tackle, used to be in Green Bay. Punter John Ryan used to be in Green Bay. I'm trying to think who else out there might be a former Packer. That's it off the top of my head. But still, congrats to the Seahawks. I do have to touch today on Richard Sherman, the Seahawks' superb cornerback. Nobody can deny he is a very good player, maybe a great player, probably the best cornerback in today's NFL. And everybody knows it by now. I mean, if I, I I can't believe I would have to recap this. If you're listening to the show and are that big of a football fan, you've probably heard it. Richard Sherman makes the big play with, what is it, 30 seconds left in the game, less than 30, deflects the pass that was in the end zone, intended for Michael Crabtree, deflects it, pass is intercepted by a teammate. Seahawks win the Super Bowl. And after that play, Richard Sherman just starts acting like a jackass. He first of all makes the choke symbol in regards to the 49ers choking the game away, and then goes, of course, on this on his post-game interview with Fox's Aaron Andrews, goes out to point out about the war of words he's having with Michael Crabtree. That were just ridiculous. It baffled my mind to watch that at the end of the game, how Richard Sherman acted. And again, this has nothing to do. I fully acknowledge he is a great player by all means. But the way he acted at the end of the game, was ridiculous. Richard Sherman, you just made the play that clinched a Super Bowl berth for the Seattle Seahawks and made you a hero in the city of Seattle. Everybody loves you. Why do you not take the high road? Why is your first instinct to make fun of the other team? I just don't get it. Like, what? You are on top of the world. You made the play of the game. The moment should be a rightly deserved about you, not about the 49ers choking, anything you have against Michael Crabtree. Forget about it. I don't know why he was so offended by what Michael Crabtree had to say. If I were Richard Sherman, Michael Crabtree could have said the most vulgar, offensive stuff in the world, and I would just be like, who the heck cares? I am going to the Super Bowl. You're not. Just let it be like water off a duck's back. Just ignore it and go celebrate with my teammates and be happy. I don't know why he had to bring this whole grudge into things. It was absolutely ludicrous, if you ask me. There are worse things in the world. Certainly Richard Sherman is not Aaron Hernandez. And as long as he is out there obeying the law, and if this is the worst thing he'd do is act a little classless, we should be happy. Maybe that's the world we live in, where that's the worst thing that happens. Doesn't mean I have to like it. Doesn't mean I have to think Richard Sherman is a great guy. But wow, it just was rather weird to watch that at the end of the game. It was just, it baffles me. I was speechless to sit there and watch that on my television late last night, as the Seahawks, the play of the game, clinches the game and assures the Seahawks would be in the Super Bowl, because the 49ers were only down by 1 point. That pass is complete. It's a touchdown. It's the 49ers going to the Super Bowl more than likely instead. So, Richard Sherman, you're great, but man, oh man, you need some lessons and some manners. And I realize this isn't the first time Richard Sherman has acted out. He has kind of a history of being very outspoken, and he's not afraid to tell everyone how good he is, but he does back it up. I'll give him to that. The Seahawks with a terrific defense in general, and part of the reason they are going to the Super Bowl, they are qualifying, and kind of getting back into Packers talk here today. You know what? My reflections on why the Packers are sitting home right now and the Seahawks aren't, and the Broncos aren't. And I wanted to bring to light two players who I think made big plays in yesterday's respective championship games. And as seeing as we're talking about the NFC and the Seahawks here, I'll just keep right with it. There was a moment late in the fourth quarter in yesterday's game, midway through the fourth quarter. But basically, my point is why the Packers are home for the Super Bowl. I mean, it goes beyond just this. There are many reasons, but Micah Hyde is not Cam Chancellor. So basically, to set the scene, midway through the fourth quarter yesterday's game, I think at the point the Seahawks were up by 3 points. They were up by a field goal. And the 49ers were trying to drive and either tie the game or take the lead midway through the game. And you saw a very, very similar situation happen as to the Packers 49ers game in the wild card round. In that game, of course, the Packers were down and the Seahawks had the ball. And Colin Kaepernick, you know, the exact same situation here, same player. He throws an out route to the sideline that yesterday was intercepted, undercut by Seattle Seahawks safety Cam Chancellor. The Seahawks, I think, if I remember the situation correctly, after the interception, kick another field goal, go up by 6 points, you know, makes it tougher on the 49ers. They can no longer now tie the game with a field goal. They got to go for a touchdown. I'm sure the Seahawks would have liked to have scored a touchdown after that. But regardless, a big point in the game, big play by a Pro Bowl player, Cam Chancellor, good player, great player. The Packers would be lucky to have a safety of his caliber on their team. And of course, in the Packers' loss to the 49ers in the wild card round, same thing. Mid-fourth quarter, late fourth quarter, Colin Kaepernick throwing a route to the sideline that Micah Hyde could have maybe picked off. And granted, it wasn't exactly the same. The play that Micah Hyde would have had to have made would have been a lot harder. It was a lot harder. Micah Hyde had to leap rather high. It was no easy catch in his breadbasket, by all means. He had to extend his arms over his head, couldn't corral it in, but the opportunity was there. And I don't mean to rip on Micah Hyde. He had a very good season in 2013, especially if we're talking about a rookie who was, you know, a playing on the biggest stage in sports, an NFL playoff game. That's a tough play to make. And it wasn't quite as hard for Cam Chancellor. He undercuts the route just like Micah Hyde. But it was an easier catch for Cam Chancellor, and just the simple fact that Cam Chancellor is like he's over 6'1", I think. He's got that longer frame, which made it easier as well. So I'm not disparaging everything about Micah Hyde here, but it was just the situations were so similar. There were kind of parallels there in which an opportunity the Packers failed to capitalize upon in their playoff game against the 49ers that the Seahawks did capitalize upon yesterday, and that's why they're going to the Super Bowl. It is such a good defense the Seahawks have, and you know, we talked about Richard Sherman, we talked about Cam Chancellor. The Seahawks have such a good secondary, and it goes beyond them. Earl Thomas is another Pro Bowl type of safety there in Seattle, and a guy who's just 5'10". Earl Thomas, and of course, that's a kind of a talking point with him. He gets the job done despite being rather short. And of course, the Packers, they have this aversion to short safeties, defensive backs in general. They don't sign many of them. They did sign Chris Banjo this past year, but I mean, it was a mid-training camp addition, and had they not been in that type of dire situation need at that point, they probably wouldn't have signed Chris Banjo either. You know, ends up being an okay signing for what it is, but he's no He's no Earl Thomas. And again, you know, going back to the point here, the Seahawks have such a good secondary there. I mean, that's why they're in the Super Bowl. Those guys are ball hawks. They're tall and rangy and lanky outside of Earl Thomas. You know, Sherman and Chancellor are. And they just, you know, they're able to get in people's faces, and they play with an attitude. They're hard hitters. They get a decent pass rush in front of them. The front seven probably isn't as good in the secondary in Seattle, but, you know, still a good unit regardless. And the Packers not quite up to snuff there. And on top of that, then, so now moving on to the AFC Championship game, I said Micah Hyde wasn't Cam Chancellor. Well, in regards to the AFC Championship and the Denver Broncos who have qualified, B.J. Raji is not Terrence Knighton. I thought their defensive tackle yesterday, Terrence Knighton of the Denver Broncos, obviously had a big game, had a big sack of Tom Brady, and they're very kind of similar players. I think Terrence Knighton is probably a little bit taller than B.J. Raji, but still, here you have defensive tackles, both in excess of 330 pounds, yesterday it was Terrence Knighton that came through with the big sack, with two tackles for a loss, with several tackles on the day, coming up big, and that's something the Packers didn't get out of B.J. Raji in 2013. Something they did get out of B.J. Raji the last time the Packers won the Super Bowl. And to see that regression has been so disappointing out of that man. And I know we can sit here and talk about how the Broncos run a 4-3, and, you know, there is discrepancies there, and B.J. Raji is asked to be more of a two-gapping defensive lineman that doesn't exactly always get to shoot gaps. He's frequently asked to, you know, plug holes and swallow up blockers, so it's the linebackers that make the plays. Yes, 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 but I mean, again, I mean, I've gone through this, I feel like, 100 times. B.J. Raji, I mean, let's face it, the guy plays 16 regular season games and makes 17 tackles. That's an average of one tackle a game. Doesn't come up with a single sack. I realize B.J. Raji is not going to put up big, big numbers in a 3-4, especially a two-gapping 3-4 type of system. But still, he did make those plays in the Super Bowl season. The opportunities were there. He did shed blockers and was able to make plays. He was able to shoot the occasional gap and get after the quarterback. 7.5 sacks Raji made that Super Bowl season when you include the regular season and the playoffs combined. 7.5 sacks. Now, B.J. Raji hasn't had a sack for more than two seasons. November of 2011, the last time B.J. Raji came up with a sack. And And now he enters free agency, of course, and the Packers wonder what are they going to do with him. And again, it goes back to the whole free agency discussion here that we just had, you know, minutes ago about team building. And you know, Ted Thompson's kind of draft and develop method is being questioned after all these, you know, three consecutive playoff losses. Well, go and look at the Denver Broncos, which just brought to my light by a reader on Twitter right before the show when I kind of threw out topics we were going to discuss today. Justin Scanlon says, you know, Terrence Knighton is a good example of a player, a free agent that you don't have to break the bank for to help the team. And the Broncos did that with several players. Of course, they go out and sign, you know, Peyton Manning 2 years ago, but on top of that, they give him a good receiving target in Wes Welker. They go out and sign Pro Bowl guard Luis Vasquez. They sign cornerback Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, and then Terrence Knighton, who I just referenced before. All these are unrestricted free agent additions to that Broncos team. They got it done in largely building that team through free agency, at least adding several key pieces through free agency. I mean, That there, right there, is a guy who's, you know, that team, just totally different from what the Packers do and their draft and develop method, where they're so averse to getting involved in free agency. Not to say that the Packers never do, and of course, you know, you can point to the signings that one off season of Ryan Pickett and Charles Woodson, and that ended up being, you know, that one off season, a big reason the Packers would eventually go on to win their Super Bowl. Maybe it's time for them to do that again. And there are drawbacks. I mean, you do get active in free agency, and then you're not going to get those compensatory draft picks. I mean, so in just a you know, several weeks from now, the Packers are going to be awarded draft picks for the losses of Greg Jennings and Eric Walden. That they're going to get two free draft picks for losing those people. Now, the NFL is very complicated. You get those comp picks for being for losing people without signing people. So if the Packers were active in free agency this past season, it's very possible they wouldn't get those picks for Greg Jennings, or they wouldn't for Eric Walden. So, I mean, there is some other consideration, some push and pull here that people do have to consider, that I don't think they're always, that's always in the forefront of their mind when they, you know, think of Ted Thompson and criticize him for not being active in free agency. There are reasons why he doesn't that aren't immediately, like, you don't immediately understand why, because the payoff from not being, you know, active in free agency comes more than a year later, you know, with those comp picks. When you're awarded them, they come more than a year later. It's hard to see the forest through the trees in that regard. You know, people are just, you know, see the Packers not signing anyone, and of course, you know, then are going to criticize. And, you know, try to think back about this as well, and it's so interesting to think about now. You know, I think people, there were a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people at the time, mad the Packers didn't go out and sign running back Steven Jackson in free agency. Well, you know, how glad are you now that the Packers didn't, and then they end up drafting Eddie Lacy in the second round, and he goes on to be the rookie of the year, and you know, just, you know, really ends up being the perfect addition to the Packers team, somebody they didn't have to spend millions and millions of dollars on in free agency. So there you go. That's another thought. But so there's your reflections on the AFC NFC championship games, how they how they reflect on the Green Bay Packers, or how they're related to the Green Bay Packers. So there you go. It's now on Monday. What is today's date? January 20th. Happy Martin Luther King Day, by the way, everyone, for those of you who may have off of work, or just celebrating the holiday in general, and celebrating and honoring a great man in American history. But on this day, I guess, you know, it's the first episode here of Railbird Central since the big news that came down the pike last Friday, so I haven't really had a chance to discuss it yet. The kind of surprising resignation of outside linebackers coach Kevin Green, that kind of, I think, caught everybody by surprise. That nobody really saw coming here, seeing him step down, the kind of story breaking on the official website of the Packers, citing Kevin Green's desire to spend more time with family. And you know, I get it. You only have one life to live, and if you don't do that, you never get a second chance. And he has young kids, from what I understand, and maybe that, you know, that can certainly be the case. I think sometimes people are skeptical. They hear that and wonder, he just wasn't doing a good job. Well, I don't think that's the case. I think Kevin Green did a very good job for an outside linebackers coach. You know, Kevin Green is a high-profile guy. He's currently being considered for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's a big name that people, football fans nationwide, worldwide, if you're a fan outside of America, that they recognize because he was such a good player. We'll find out during the week of the I think it's right, the day before the Super Bowl, the Saturday before the Super Bowl, they announce the class of Hall of Famers. Kevin Green, one of the finalists being considered. You know, he's got a 1-in-3 shot probably of being named to the Hall of Fame. No guarantee, but he's being talked about that. After his NFL playing career, he kind of got involved in professional wrestling for a while. Kind of a weird career move, but you know, it still kind of added to his visibility, is I guess what I'm saying. And then I think he got a lot of notoriety early on in his coaching career for developing Clay Matthews. And you know, there's that the official NFL Films highlight video from Super Bowl 2010, Kevin Green talking to Clay Matthews on the sideline, telling him it is time. And very shortly after that, Clay Matthews forces the, you know, big fumble in the Super Bowl that helps the Packers win the game, and the rest is history. So I think, you know, all these things add up to the legend of Kevin Green. And I think, you know, to an extent, I think Kevin Green is a very good position coach, but I don't think he was probably had as good a reputation as maybe people thought he did, just because he's a big name. You know, I get people suggest to me on Twitter, oh, I thought he would be the next defensive coordinator after Dom Capers is done, whether he's fired or just eventually retires or whatever. I don't think that was ever really the case. I think if you take a look at the coaches on the Packers defensive staff, I think Kevin Green is far down the list, would have been far down the list of potential, you know, future defensive coordinators behind the likes of Mike Turgovac, the defensive line coach, Darren Perry, the safeties coach, Winston Moss, the inside linebackers coach. Behind all those guys, I'm not sure how many other of them are other, you know, candidates for defensive coordinators out there. I'm sure they'd maybe all like to be eventually, but I think, you know, maybe he was just a higher profile name than people, than he was a high riser prospect, but a very good position coach nonetheless. He did a great job with Clay Matthews. You can kind of argue about the other people he's coached haven't exactly developed the way you wanted to. You know, I think everybody had higher hopes for Nick Perry than what he's done so far. But again, still a young guy who's had injury issues. If Nick Perry can just stay healthy, there's a lot of hope for him. He helped Mike Neal make that transition from defensive line to outside linebacker, that which was good. But, you know, I think people have always had higher hopes for Mike Neal in 4 years as a second round draft choice. You know, last year, Desmond Moses, he ends up getting cut. Brad Jones makes the transition to inside linebacker. Same with Jamari Lattimore. So there were a lot of things that didn't quite, you know, work out as planned or as had hoped. All those kind of things. But anyway, I mean, the contributions of Kevin Green were great. No doubt about it. Helped him win a Super Bowl. Congratulations to him. Thanks for all the work you've done, Kevin. I know you're probably not listening to the show, but if you happen to, congratulations on what I think was a great career coaching and playing. Hopefully you get back into it someday. Thanks for your contributions to the Packers and helping them win a Super Bowl. And best of luck to you in your quest your Pro Football Hall of Fame hopes. I wish you the best. I hope you get in to the Hall of Fame. So that was kind of the big news last week. Now here we are on a Monday. It's Senior Bowl week. I think that's kind of the news you're going to hear throughout the week in regards to the Packers. I guarantee you General manager Ted Thompson is there, along with probably most of the Packers scouting staff. You know, last week they were at the East-West Shrine Game, the NFLPA Bowl. There's only one All-Star game this week, so I think probably most of the scouts and the personnel department are all in Mobile. They're watching practices. The weigh-in takes place this morning, actually right now. I think it started at 7:30 a.m., ended at 9 o'clock a.m. Central Time. All the players get measured, you know, height, weight, arm length, hand size, all those kind of things. They're going to be watching practice. They're going to be interviewing players. They actually have, you know, time where they take prospects to their hotel rooms and interview them and talk to them, get to know them. You know, they ask them questions, anything they want, from personal stuff to get to know them to X's and O's, and, you know, they'll have prospects diagram things on a board for them, all those kind of things. You know, that's taking place this week. So the Packers looking for the next, generation here, the next class of Packers rookies, seeing who they want to draft, who they're going to go after, all those kind of things taking place this week down in Mobile. Eventually, I know, on Friday, we'll be talking again to Pigskin Paul Guillemette. He's at the site of the Senior Bowl this week. We'll talk to him after all the practices have taken place and kind of his reactions to what took place on the field, who's the risers, fallers, things like that. And maybe some Packers connections we can talk to him like we did last week for the Shrine game. So that's kind of what's on tap this week in the world of the Green Bay Packers and Railbird Central in specific. So, but everybody, thanks for joining us here on a Monday morning at Railbird Central. As usual, it's great to talk some Packers football. That'll do it for today. We'll be back again on Wednesday, as we are every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here at CheeseheadTV.com, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Kirivu. We'll see you later, folks. Stay tuned to CheeseheadTV.com for all your news needs all week long. I leave you today with a song called Hard Livin' by Railroad Earth on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.